And you're welcome once again to Terrace Talk. We shall forget the witch you right through until 7 o'clock. And my midfield partner, Eamon O'Sullivan, is opting out tonight. He's not with us. Eamon has a break. And so he'll be back with you next week. But straight away, our first Terrace Talk of 1999. And indeed, on behalf of all the Terrace Talk team, I'd like to wish our listeners a happy and indeed a very peaceful 1999. And we hope that you'll keep tuning in and keep, more importantly, keep bringing up Terrace Talk for the coming year 1999. And of course, our number tonight is 066-23666. And let me say straight away to our listeners, if you're interested, have your pencils and biros out, because we'll be calling out tonight, the first time ever, the top 25 Kerry goalscorers in the last 50 years. And I have no doubt it's going to cause some bit of a debate. Well, Eamon mightn't be with me tonight, but I have a very special guest in the studio. I don't know how to introduce him. Anyway, I'll introduce him like this. His delicate and refined skills bear the hallmark of a true perfectionist. In him is enshrined the grace of a ballerina, the speed of a gazelle, and the eye of a hawk, the cunning of a fox. No man has taken Kerry out of more tight corners, and no man since Mick O'Connell has come remotely near the peak of excellence he has scaled. His prodigious two-footed wizardry is awe-inspiring, even to the acknowledged GAA men. But it didn't happen by mere accident. In quiet moments in his own, he worked assiduously in his quest for perfection, holding the ball on his instep, juggling with it, toying with it, and finally teasing it into submission. In these, his consummate artistry often appeared signally out of place in the hurly-burly of Gaelic football. But most of all, he is a phenomenal reader of the game. No matter how coarsely marked, he has that uncanny facility to be in the right place at the right time, and his amazing perception of outfield play, which sees him drift into open spaces, which such unfailing monotony is no mere quicker fate. Mickey Sheehy, you're very welcome to Terrace Talk.
Thanks very much, Sheehy.
Well, Mick, I suppose the first thing I should say to you is, I suppose you got all what we've been reading about there from your father. Would I be right in saying that?
Well, I suppose he's thankfully he's 81 years of age now, and he was above in Austinstack Park last Sunday. I think since I was old enough to hold a football, he was the man that encouraged me. And I suppose there was a famous story my mother tells that there was a christening that he was, I think it was my own christening, that he was running out to a match, and it was a job to keep him there. So I think, you know, I'd say it was obvious then that I was going to follow up his footsteps as such. He played a bit of football with Lone Rangers. I don't know whether he was any good or not. I think he was, a few fellows told me he was a better boxer than a footballer. But I suppose that's where it came from.
And of course, Mick, just before we forget, your own family, tell us about your married and who your own kids are. Because usually in this program, time goes so fast that we'd be rushing at the end. So you better mention that young Mickey Sheehy coming up.
Well, my wife, Grania, and their two boys, Mike and David.
Right, Mick. And your wife, of course, is a Sligo woman.
No, she's a Belfast woman.
Belfast woman, yeah. Even further away. Oh, that's no. Right, yeah. Anyway, Mickey, listen to me. You played minor and under 21 with Kerry. When you were... let's go back to the very start with the Stacks now, when you were training. Who looked after you at the under-10s up along?
We were very well looked after, I suppose, number one, above in Tralee Base Primary School by Michal Hayes. He was also a very active member in the Austin Stacks at the particular time. Then it followed on with James Hobart, God rest him, and Jackie Parker as well. I think those three men, and Joe Mulchnick as well was another man that was always involved. I think Michal Hayes and James started bringing us to Dublin and to Cork on various trips, you know, and they looked after us exceptionally well.
There was a famous story which somebody told me about. He was either Michal or James Latimer. Somebody wrote to some fellow in America, and he sent home $1,000 or $100 or something, and there was a crowd of you brought to some match somewhere. Were you on that trip?
No, I didn't hear about the $100, but we were bought on 20 trips anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Mick, coming up along then, of course, when you were young then, had you visions of becoming a great Kerry footballer? And who used you to look up to? What Kerry players used you to look back on? And who used you hear about? And when you were young days, how did all this become ingrained in you?
Well, I suppose when I was a young fella, again, as I said to you, it was football was a religion in my house, not alone in my own house, but also in my grandfather's house, my mother's father. You know, Connors, and I remember when we were young, we used to be listening to the games on the radio, Michal O'Hare, and I suppose from a very young age it was my ambition to try and play in Croke Park, play with Kerry. And I think the first time I was in Croke Park was in 1962, the All-Ireland semi-final between Kerry and Dublin. And Kerry won that game. I remember Mick O'Connell gave a fantastic exhibition of football that day. And I suppose himself and Mick O'Dwyer were the two guys, the two Kerry players that I would have looked up to. But I would say Mick O'Connell, number one, I thought he was an absolute genius. I thought he was probably, well, it was the right thing to say or the wrong thing to say. I thought he was probably before his time, you know, in that era of football that he played.
I agree totally with you. He's my idol myself. But what made him, what did you admire so much in Mick O'Connell? I often ask this to Phyllis. What had he?
Well, I think the way he carried himself, number one, he was always like a thoroughbred, you know. He used to always have the collar up, and he was a beautiful two-footed kicker. He was another thing about him was that he always played football. I mean, he was often guys often try to rough him out of it, and I believe he was well able to handle himself in the QT, but he didn't. He never had to resort to those tactics. He was just a pure artist, and left and right. I remember one day seeing him in, I can't remember if it was an All-Ireland semi-final or final against Galway, but there was a free, I'd say it was about, well, it must have been, genuinely, it was at least, I'd say 60, 65 yards, and Mick O'Dwyer used to even place the ball, he used to just throw it down, and he used to turn his back in it, and then he'd give a little bit of a jig, and remember he hit this one.
That's
and
right.
Like, he was aiming for a pint, but it actually hit the crossbar and came out about 20 yards, but it was an unbelievable skill. You know, I remember actually in the 62 semi-final against Dublin seeing him pint a sideline ball, and to some kick from under the Hogan stand, you know, just straight over the
back. Did you visualise yourself then, Mick, watching, sitting up in the stand? Did you ever sit down and say, I'll be out there someday and I'll be doing that?
Well, I don't know whether you think you'll be doing it or not, but it was always my ambition was to get on the Kerry team, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've often spoken about coaching, about coaches can coach guys to a certain extent, but I think the one thing that you have to do, if coaches tell you to do A, B, C or D, you will actually learn a lot more yourself going out and kicking a ball against the wall or working on your weaker foot, you know. And I think that was one thing that I would have picked up watching Mick O'Dwyer in particular, you know. His left leg was natural, his right leg.
So, Mick, if you were talking to the young fellas around Kerry and the surrounding counties now tonight, and you were to give them a tip about your marvellous skills, how you developed them, what would you say to them?
Well, I mean, the more you practice, the better you're going to get, Wishy. I mean, you know, as I said, listen to your coaches. But, I mean, you have to spend time on your own. You've got to get a ball. You've got to go out there and you practice. And you hit it off a wall or you start aiming it at small targets. And the more you practice, there's no doubt, the better you're going to get.
I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the younger fellas are doing that as much in their own today. Everything is organised.
Well, it's organised. But I'd say, to be fair to young fellas today, Wishy, is that there definitely are too many distractions. There's no doubt about it. I mean, like, when I was young, I mean, I'd say I was about 14 before I saw a television, which I believe is not my own. Two young fellas don't believe that, but nowadays they have Nintendo games, they have computer games, they have television, they have everything.
Yeah.
There's no doubt the distractions are there. Like.
Yeah. Well, talking about skill, I must congratulate Field Rangers winning the Under-21 County Championship. I know Mick, you won that last Sunday, they beat South Kerry, but bad conditions, but tremendous skill. So well done to Field Rangers there. You went down to the Kerry Miners, didn't make it Under-21s. You had a bit of a weight problem around that age, hadn't you?
I did.
You were overweight, let's put it like that.
I was nearly as big then as I am now. I did. I was playing with the Green, and I can't remember what year it was. It was my second year with the Green senior team. And I was always inclined to be carrying a bit of weight anyway. And I got a very bad groin injury. And I was out of football for about 6-7 months. And between vanillas and sweet cake and biscuits, it piled on. And I remember in 75, it was when Mick O'Dwyer took us over. I think around March, 75. Good God, I tell you, he knocked chunks off me anyway, a lot more of the fellas, you know, but it was at that stage that I...
Of course, you played minor and Under-21, Mick. Tell us about those years.
I did. I played 2 years Kerry minor, yeah. We were beaten fairly well above in the athletic grounds. I think it was 1971. And in 72, we had a very good team, and we were beaten by Cork and Killarney, a famous man by the name of Jimmy Barrymore. Fates, they got a goal. Maybe with 10 minutes to go, we were actually leading by 5 points at the time. But we had an exceptionally good team. No, Paddy Shea was on it. Tim Kennelly was on it. And Cork actually went down and won the All-Ireland handy off, and I felt it was one that we left slip away.
And Under-21, didn't make?
Under-21, then, yeah. I played 73, 74, 75.
You won two?
We won two All-Ireland.
Two, yeah. Mm. Now, just jumping, I'm going to jump forward very quick and ask you, because an awful lot of people ask me to ask you this one. I'm not going to ask you the one you would expect me to ask for a while. You know that will come later on. But anyway, the other goal, the equalising goal, against Cork, above in Cork that day.
Two pints down.
I was inside in Jimmy Bryan's pub today, talking to him, not drinking like an head, and there was a crowd of lads inside. Ask him, how the hell did he get the ball in between John Kearns and the post? Mick, tell us, could you tell us?
Time was nearly up. I can remember well. A ball went out to the left corner, I think it was Mike McAuliffe, wasn't it? And he gave it in to me, and I think I played a 1-2 with somebody. Maybe it was Jar Power or somebody, or maybe it was Mike McAuliffe.
It was Mike McAuliffe again, I think, yeah.
Power, he was at the edge of the small square, and he was looking for it, and one of the cockbacks was kind of getting a hand, and it was a Dennis Welch or whoever, and all I did really, basically, was just hit it and hope with my instep. But I met him actually recently, Coleman Corrigan, who was full back with Cork, and I had it confirmed by him. I says, tell me this, I said, did that ball hit you, Shane Bourne? And he says he thinks it did, just before when it only barely went over the line in by the post. But he was very close to John Cairns, and I think he actually probably came in John's way, you know. But that's why it definitely didn't go in direct for me.
But you're saying Mick was more hope. But you'd say that anyway. But no, I was standing directly behind Billy Morgan that day. He was standing, and what he did was, do you know what he did when he was going to goal? He threw himself out on, as the fella says, on his face and eyes, and he covered his head down, and he had his head down into the grass. I don't think he even saw what happened after that. The ball was kicked out, and as we all know, the joke. And then you went back to Killarney, and everything went wrong.
It was a nightmare that day.
What happened that day, Mick?
Oh, gee, I couldn't repeat. I tell you. I'll tell you some more time, Weezy, but if you ever have Gerald Lynch on the program, he'd tell you a good story about that there.
1 pint at half time.
What was dreadful altogether?
I'm including the worst with the best now.
It was a nightmare game.
That was the end, really, wasn't it?
That was the finisher.
That was the finish.
I think, really, it was probably the finish of that team. Probably, you know, some of the lads, I stayed on for a few league games in early 88, but some of the lads stayed on, you know, another couple of years. But I think basically. That was the end of it, really, I felt, you know, of that era.
Yeah. Well, we might be finishing this part of the programme at the end, but when we come back, we'll be going back to the start because we have loads to talk about. So, Mickey Sheehy's staying with us. We're taking a quick break. Stay with us and tell us talk. And you're welcome back to Tell Us Talk. I'm talking to Mickey Sheehy. Mickey Sheehy, of course, one of the all-time great goal scorers. And talking about great goal scorers, we're going to have a look at Kerry goal scorers. Now, last year around August and September, I was watching the Kerry team training with my good friend Mort Gallivan, that great GMN, sitting in the stand in Killarney, and another great GMN, Mick Mahoney, the Killarney man, but he's a Lone Rangers man, was sitting down, we were talking. Mick is 76 years old. Mick, great fan of yours, by the way, too. And we were talking about Kerry goal scorers who the great ones. Gee, says Mick, he says, I have a load of scrapbooks at home going back over 50 years. He says, I make out the goal scorers. He says, no, you're sorry, he stopped them because it took him about 2 months to do it. But Mick Mahoney, great man. Anyway, I spoke to Mick Mahoney about 2 months ago and went up to his home and spoke to him. He made out his list, did a marvellous job, Mick Mahoney. But he still wants to say that this list couldn't be 100% authentic. If somebody, Mick, wants to do better, they can sit down and make it out. He might have missed an odd match. But anyway, this is what Mick Mahoney had to say to me.
I saw Kerry playing my first game when I was 6 years of age, up on my father's shoulders. I think it was Kerry in New York and Kerry over in Tralee. And ever since, I have been a follower of the games, especially, I suppose, the Lone Rangers, seeing that I was from Killadlin. And from a young age, played football. There was no organized juvenile football at that time. And I played with the seniors my first game when I was 17 in 1939. And I was playing until about 1939 when I had to give up over through illness. And after that, I always travelled to games and so on and so forth. The Lone Rangers in them days, of course, had very few players because the bulk of them were in the army during the war and gone to England. And there was only very few left. I swear in the 10 years I played, we didn't win 10 games.
Mick, before we go any further anywhere, what age you know, and tell us about your earliest memories of the football back in Killarney and your earliest memories of Kerry teams.
I'll be 76 the 29th day of this December coming. Naturally, when you were a young lad, like I said, I saw my first game at 6 years of age. And I often thought since that Joe Barrett and John Joe Sheehy and all them must have been playing them games, but I didn't take much notes of them. Maybe if some games I went to as a young lad, I'd be running around kicking a ball myself. But I can remember from, especially maybe from the 1935s, 36, 37s up along, can remember all them players. And God Almighty, when I look back at some of them, there's no doubt they were great men. Oh God, you were in the 37 teams. You had the Landers, you had Timmy Leary, you had Joe Cahan, you had all the men. Giga Connor, I suppose, came on. Well, that'd be, I think he came on the sub in 37. And they were outstanding players, every one of them. Of course, a different type of football. Catch and kick. Every player was confined to his own square few yards, he got his ball, fielded it, and off she went. There was no passing. If you passed two or three balls across the goals like they were doing last Sunday in the All-Ireland, you'd be confined to the sideline for a while. Oh, the best player I ever seen. No one will ever convince me that the best player I ever see was Paddy Kindy. Maybe he had an extra halo around his head due to the fact that I was young in them days and we hadn't maybe seen some more players that we've seen since. But in spite of what I've ever seen since, I think Paddy Kindy was the king of them all.
Why was he better, Mick, in your view, than Mick O'Conlon, we'll say Jack O'Shea?
Well, I wouldn't like to say Jack or Mick were terrible inferior to him. Maybe Paddy Kindy was a handsome looking man, tall, good looking, and I don't think he ever played a bad game in his life. A lot more consistent than Connell. Now, Connell in his day was beautiful to watch. But Paddy Kindy never played a bad game in his life. In fact, in the 1945 Munster final above here in the Fitzgerald Stadium, Willie Casey wasn't available that year, and Paddy Kindy played centre half back. And the following Friday, his photo was in the Kerry Man, and it said, Paddy Kindy plays a grand game in a lost cause. I suppose the 1955 All-Ireland would stand out in everyone's memory for the fact that we weren't supposed to be able to challenge the Dubs at that time at all. I saw them games. I saw the double semi-finals against Kerry playing Cavan and Dublin playing Mayo, and again we were on the sideline again for the final. There's no doubt it, but it was a great moment. And I think that fired up my imagination, and I used to start cutting bits out of scrapbooks or out of newspapers. We mightn't have too many newspapers that time every day, but I used to paste them in. My mother made a book out of leaves of brown paper and put a cover on it. And ever after dinner, I used to be putting in that match. I will admit that in the early years when our team used to get beaten, I'm afraid we didn't put him in at all. It wasn't until about 1955, I'd say, that I started including every game. Championship, leagues, challenge, tournaments, every type of a game. I don't believe I have three or four games missed from 1955 to the present day.
And Mick, they are huge scrapbooks. Tell us the type of a book that you put all these massive amounts of cuttings into.
Oh, I find it difficult to, and I struck on the idea that if I got one of those wallpaper catalogues that I have. So I got one of those, and it worked out fine. And ever since, I always get one of those wallpaper catalogues. They're getting a bit more, in the old days they were big, very thick, big ones, but now they're a bit more, they aren't as big as they used to be, and it's easier to deal with them.
We met, as we did most nights, watching the Kerry team training over in Fitzgerald Stadium. And one particular night, we were talking about the great Kerry goal scorers over the years, and we were discussing it. And you said to me, I'll make out a list for Terrace Talk, you said, about the great Kerry goal scorers. I can go back many, many years. Now, tell us how you went about making out who the top goal scorers were in Kerry.
Well, after that occasion when we discussed about great goal scorers, I came home and I looked at my number of albums, and I was half sorry for saying it, because I have about six huge of those wallpaper books, as I call them. So I had to stop the way back. I didn't go back to 37. I started roughly around the 55. And from that on, I went through every match report that I have and totted up the number of goals that each player scored. In the old days, I suppose, there wouldn't be as many goals due to the number or the fact that there weren't an awful lot of games played that time. And Kerry used to take the league too very seriously at that time. Often they only picked up players maybe outside the county even in their going when they'd find themselves shot, so that you didn't have as many challenger tournaments even in the old days.
Mick Mahoney there speaking to me, Mickey from his home. Mick, we often talk about tradition handing it down. This man is doing it.
Unbelievable.
What do you think of that?
Fantastic, yeah. You know, for a man of 76, and he still knows his football from years gone by. It's just fanaticism, really.
It is, yeah. You should see the scrapbooks he has, Mick. I mean, it's fabulous amount of stuff. Awesome. And you're inside in the middle of them all. Anyway, he wants to make the point clear. If anyone wants to better his list, away with them, and they're glad to do it. He might have missed an odd game, and he did his best. So, let's we'll rattle off a few, Mick, before we talk away anyway. In 25th place with 10 goals, John Crowley, Darrow Kinnear, Willie Maher, Dom O'Donnell, the late Eamon O'Donoghue, Dan Kavanagh, and John Dowling. Dan Kavanagh, the only Killarney man in there, Mick.
Yeah.
Those names ring a few bells, Mick?
They do, of course. They do indeed.
They do indeed. In 24th place with 11 goals, all on his own, Tralee, the late great Paddy Sheehy.
Oh, yeah.
In 23rd place with 12 goals, another Killarney man, and a Valencia man, Mick Gleeson and George Driscoll. In 22nd place with 14 goals, Dave Ganey, the Castle Island Desmond's man, Pat Dinehy, and Ambrose Rosie O'Donovan. In 25th place with 15 goals, Shawnee Welsh.
Oh,
15. By the way, Mick, before I go on, have you any idea how many goals you scored for Kerry?
Not a clue, no.
Would you throw a wrong figure in it?
Would you?
Would you score 30, 40, 50?
Maybe around, I don't know, are you including challenge games and everything?
Every time you put on a Kerry jersey, just while you're here with me now.
I suppose between 30, 35 or 35.
We scored a lot of them anyway. Anyway, the 25th place we were saying, Shawnee Welsh and Sean Ganey. Sean Ganey, the Dingleman.
Oh, yeah.
A man player, I thought didn't get a fair deal, I must say that. A lovely,
good player, yeah.
Good player, Mick. Scored 15 goals for Kerry in his good time man. And didn't get much of a run. In 20th place with 16 goals, Dan McAuliffe. And our own man, Mick O'Connell.
Oh, Mick O'Connell.
Centre fieldman, great scoring for a centre fieldman.
Indeed.
Yeah, 16 goals. In 19th place with 25 goals, Tom Long, another great goal scorer. Saw him scoring 4 goals for his Kerry one day in a county final. I was delighted because I was playing with his Kerry. He was doing the scoring and I was leaving the minute the other end. Anyway, in 18th place with 27 goals, Dr. Brendan Lynch,
yeah.
The Arnamess and St. Finnes, buried his late father Tom lately there. And 17th place with 28 goals, Gary McMahon and Pat Griffin. And we'll be coming, that's the Pat Griffin, of course, from Glenda. Now, we'll be coming to the rest of them later on. We'll take a bit, we'll have a bit of a chat with Mick. Mick, does anything come through there to now, listening to those names?
It doesn't, but I suppose the one thing you'd look at is the what you said there about Mick. How many goals has he got from midfield? Is it 15?
He got something like 15. Mick O'Connell, yeah, 16 goals.
Well, the other thing that surprises me, he'd probably kill me for saying that. I didn't realise Rosie got as many goals as that.
To see Mick was including all types there. Mm. Mick, getting back to yourself, by the way, the Kerry Supporters Club, their socials on the 16th, and Gary, Martin Lee rang up, Mick, you're the guest speaker that night. at the supporters club. Dan Sullivan Cutter, the referee, do you recall the 5th of October 1986, Mick? Dan was the referee at the time and said that he should have put Mikey off if he followed the law of the land. But I know I don't why he didn't put him, but they had a great crack after. Do you know that?
I do, well, yeah.
What did you do wrong that day?
Tell me,
you never played up there.
That was a small bit of a schmuzzle, that's all. Myself and Patchy and my good friend Dino.
And the Dewar caller, Mike Bitterley caller, said, what do you think of the presence next team?
Well, I suppose it's a bit disappointing that they've gone to Division 2, you know, but I think a lot of clubs go through this type of a crisis and a mini crisis, and I think they've good talent coming through. There's quite a good under 16 team this year, and should be a very good minor team again next year, you know, and I think it might do the club a power of good and to start again and come back up.
Didn't every year make the Legion compete in the county championship?
And you did it fair and square, yeah.
Mick, you were offered to try to go to Southampton. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was. That was years ago, was she? 75, I'd say. I think it was early 75, and I got a letter through the post. Some guy had seen me playing soccer with the park, and they offered me, they gave me a list of fixtures to go over and play with their reserve team, but it didn't transpire, you know.
Yeah. Now, Mick, getting back to, you're getting on to Kerry Seaners and Mick Dwyer. Talk to us about his training, what he did for you, what you taught of him, and about those... anything about those years?
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, all my success with Kerry, and I think all that team of that era, we really owe it all to that. I think that, you know, as you say, like, when I came on the squad, I played in the Munster final in 74, and Mick got to go over the team then, I think, in March 75, and it was only then that I knew what fitness was. I mean, he changed the whole scene when he came in, and that famous story of how many nights we trained in a row, I think it was 28 nights in a row, you know, and he never trained two guys the same way, you know. He had different methods, and I suppose for a man who wasn't a qualified PE teacher like a lot of guys training teams at the moment, he did an absolutely fantastic job with it.
What was his strongest point as a trainer, Mick? Well, if you were to take over the Kerry team, we say tomorrow morning, what have you learned most from him?
Well, I think basically we should, number one, is when he took us over, he instilled discipline into a team, and he commanded unbelievable respect. And I mean, another fantastic thing that he had was the way he was able to motivate us. We were with him like from 1975 until 1987. I was there, and he was with some other lads were there until 19, whenever it was that he finished up. And I mean, I remember, you got the same buzz from 75 until 86 or 87. You know, he had this I don't know what you'd call it. You know, like you know, sometimes you might feel that you'd get fed up listening to the same guy. But he always varied things, you know. Training was changed, he brought in different methods, and I think above all, he kept things very simple.
Would he, before big matches now, or all matches, would he tell you how to play and where to go and what to do? Was he like Matt Busby with the old Busby Babes? We mustn't forget Man United, Man United men here.
That's right,
we have the chance, Mick, but that's another day's work. Would he tell you to roam away yourself?
He would. Like, I mean, he'd never confine you to the corner or whatever. You know, I think you were often over the training sessions. We'd spend hours playing backs and forwards, and most of it was keep it simple, keep it, drill it in, load into the bomber, and we all got a license to move wherever we wanted to go. And, you know, as I said, he never had any blackboard tactics. As I said to you, he kept it very, very simple.
Yeah. Mick, great defenders you met now down through the years. You beat most defenders, but what defenders didn't you like on out playing against, like, that could beat you, you know, or that could hold you?
Well, I suppose we should... there was one guy stood out, was Kevin Moran, who, to me, would have been an unbelievable Gaelic footballer, I think, had he stayed playing Gaelic football. But I remember marking him in 1976, and I was centre-forward that year, which I'd say Mick O'Neilly had a seizure. I'd say on the sideline, his famous run in the first couple of minutes, where he nearly scored the goal, you know. And he was the type of player that he actually preferred to attack rather than to defend, particularly if he was playing behind a midfield that was winning. And to me, no, he was a fantastic footballer.
Mick, all the goals you scored... What about saves? What goalkeepers now? What brilliant saves do you remember that were made by goalkeepers against you?
It is hard. We should to remember actual individual saves. But I would say, like, of the top goalkeepers that I would have come across, I came up against quite a number of them. Paddy Cullen obviously was a very good keeper. John O'Leary was an exceptional keeper. But the best keeper that I came up against outside of Charlie, who was an unbelievable keeper in my eyes, but was the best keeper I played against was Billy Morgan. I played a lot of times against Billy, with Stax and club championship games and against Cork. And to me, he was probably the goalie that kind of changed the role of the goalie, that he started kicking out the ball and placing wing backs, and, you know, and he was a kind of a thinking goalkeeper. You know, every time he got a ball, he used it very well.
He was a great goalkeeper.
He was very agile too. He was very hard to beat.
He was, yeah.
Throwing out one question, Juggie, now before I need to call out a few more players. Make points, we're talking about goals now. What were the most memorable points do you remember now? When you'd sit down at home now and you'd be thinking about your great games, what points do you remember you'd say to yourself, gee, I don't know how they keep that?
Points. There was one, I suppose, was against Monaghan in the All-Ireland semi-final. I was playing with the club, Aston Stax, in the All-Ireland club final against Bellarm. And the game was very tight, and it was a bad old day. It was a windy day, and it was Paddy's day, it's a wet, windy day, and it was one from under the Hogan stand, sideline ball, and I just had a lash and went over. And, you know, ones like that that you remember.
What was the worst miss you had made between a goal and also a point? What stands out? Jesus, how did they miss it?
Well, I'd in the 1987 league final against Dublin, I had a bad miss that day. Now, it was a crucial stage of the game. Bomber played a ball across to me, and John O'Leary was kind of committed. And I'd say if I went to place, I'd hit it, but Mick Kennedy, the Dublin cornerback, actually rushed back in the line. It actually grazed the top of his head and went over the bar. But it was an awful miss, dreadful miss. And the other miss, obviously, that in case the footballers don't ring in, that they're always slagging me about, was one that I can still remember to this day. And I say, you know, fellas would ask you, what are the things you remember in sport most? And it would be the 82 penalty miss, you know. That still sticks in my head.
I know as a party man, you wrote in the spa book lately, Mick, when inside in the dressing room, that you weren't supposed to take that kick. Is that right? How did that come about?
You see, yeah, he was probably right. At the particular day, I wasn't playing well. And but it's funny, you see, that Mick would never actually say in the dressing room who was to kick the penalties. But in training, you know, we had some great penalty kickers in training, like you normally do, and plenty of volunteers in training. But on that particular day, all I remember was when the penalty was awarded, the ball was thrown to me, and that was it. Like, there was no ifs or buts. All the other volunteers went missing.
Yeah.
So that was basically it. But Mick would never say who was to kick it or who wasn't to kick it.
Incidentally, Palliad just failed to get into the top 25. Palliad, he had 9 goals. Mick, he'll be back again, and we wish him the best.
He's after an operation, and yeah. I wish him the best.
Well, we're down there. We will have to go through all the great goal scorers up along. We're up now to the, we mentioned Pat Griffin and Gary McMahon. They're in there with 28 goals each. They're just above Brendan Lynch with 27, and we're coming to the top 10 goal scorers now. In at number 9, the top goal scorer in the country, for Kerry, is Morris Fitzgerald with 31 goals. Great player, Mick.
Oh, fantastic player. Morris is one of the best players you'll ever see anywhere.
Yeah.
Brilliant, skillful footballer.
Beautiful player altogether. Yeah. And in number 9, with 32 goals, another midfield man, your old partner, Jack O'Shea.
Oh, Jack.
32 goals. Fierce scoring, Mick.
Unbelievable scoring.
32
Jack,
goals. Can you remember his goals?
I can remember a few of them. Okay, he got one great one down against Dublin, a penalty against Dublin in, was it 84 or 85? 85, I think it was. I can't, I find wishy, but I do remember that he was always available to come through for passes, you know, because, I mean, I think Jacko, not alone did he score great goals, but he also stopped them. He was under the bar defending, and next minute he was above the other end scoring them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, while Mick O'Connell was probably one of the nicest, greatest footballers that I have ever seen, Jack O'Shea is a worker and an all-rounder. He'd something different then, hadn't he? I mean, you can't compare different men, can you?
Oh, you can't, no.
Let's be fair about
it. But of my era anyway, like this, excuse me, that I would have played with or against, Jack O'Shea was by far the best player of that era. I've always said it now, and I wouldn't change that.
Yeah. In at number eight, the highest goal scorer, Radio Kerry's own, Liam Higgins.
Oh, Liam Higgins.
Liam, back there on this ball, 32 goals. Oh, yeah. He scored for Kerry. He was a phenomenal goal scorer. I happened to be kicking around the panel that time. I wasn't good enough to be on it, but I was tricking around and getting in that old challenge game. But I used to be watching Liam and training in full forward. Jackie Lyne made a great full forward out of him.
Oh,
I remember Jackie Lyne telling him one time over training, we were training here in the field, and we spent the whole night kicking the ball into Liam. All he had to do was catch it and punch it out. And he turned around a few times and he went for goal himself. And Jackie Lyne said to him, Liam, he said, you have one thing to do. He said, catch it and pass it. And if you don't do that, I'll get someone else that'll do it. But he finished up anyway as number 8 top goal scorer. Well done, Higgins, with 32 goals. 36 goals at number 7, the late Bernie O'Callaghan. Great player, wasn't he?
Bernie was an outstanding player for a man that wasn't big, I suppose, you know. He was a beautiful free taker as well. I remember Bernie in the 60s, you know, and And outside of that, I suppose he made a major contribution to our team as a selector. He was a very, very shrewd man in the line.
Yeah, great player, great kind of forward. And then at number six, and we're going to stop here for the time being, your friend, John Power.
Oh, Power, he was great, yeah. He was...
Rattled some good ones.
He did, and I suppose he made a lot more than he scored himself.
Yeah. Mate, before we go for a break soon, injuries. You had bad ankles, hadn't you? Tell us about...
Yeah, I did.
Do you have anything very serious?
Yeah, no. I did. The same as any other fellow, just torn ligaments in my ankle a few times. The worst injury I had was in 87, 88, was my cruciate ligament, okay, in my right knee. But it's fine, thankfully I had it operated in 1990, just, and it's great.
Did you miss any big games, make true injury?
I did.
Did you?
I missed the 84 Ireland final, which,
through
an Achilles tendon injury.
Yeah.
It was a result of having a bad knee, it was the good leg went.
Some fellas said to me during the week, Mick, when they knew we were coming on, they said every time he scored a goal and a point, he'd turn around, just walk out. There was no celebrations and there was nothing happening. He'd just turn around and walk out as if he was going for a walk or stroll somewhere. Listen, when you see the goal scored now, like in the celebrations, things like that, was that just part and parcel of your make?
I suppose it was. I don't know. I suppose in the Gaelic scene, it's a bit different, you know. I don't fancy all this hook.
What irritates you most about the GMA?
I think maybe the chopping and changing with the rules. I don't think the game is as bad as they need to be doing all this chopping and changing. I suppose like all sports, I think they'd want to tighten up their refereeing a bit, okay. You know, I think I'm not blaming refs now, because I tell you I wouldn't do it for all the tea in China, but I think there should be a little bit more consistency, you know, with referees and make their job a bit easier.
Yeah, you scored a lot of your goals, Mitch, of course, and a lot of the Kerry lads scored the goals with the hand pass into the net. He broke Billy Morgan's hat, thrown him over, he said that. Do you think now, looking back, should that be brought back?
No, I'd be totally against the hand pass goal.
Would you?
I would, very much so, even though I availed of it more times than that. And I often remember a fella saying to me inside the bar, they'd be after a big game, you'd be after hand passing the ball in the net, and they said, gee, it'd be a great goal if you kicked it in. But I mean, it was the easy option.
Yeah.
If you kicked it and missed it, you'd be blamed, you know. But no, I definitely wouldn't be for a hand pass goal.
Well, now, we're going for a quick break, and before we do, remember, Maurice Fitzgerald with 31 goals, Jack O'Shea, number 9 with 32, Liam Higgins at 8 with 32, Bernie Callum with 36, and Joe Power with 38 goals. We're going for a short break. Stay with us. We'll be back with plenty more on Terrace Talk. And you're welcome back to Terrace Talk. Remember 0662 36 66. If you have a message from Mickey Sheehy, if you want to ask him something, if you want to see anything at all, I congratulate anybody. 0662 36 66. We are talking about the great goal scorers now. We're coming to the top five great Kerry scorers as put together by Mick Mahoney over there in Killarney, a great Lone Rangers man. And in at number five with 46 goals, Mick Dwyer. What do you think of that, Mick?
Yeah, fair dues to him, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, he was a good man to go himself, and I was sure he'd never pass it to anybody else.
I saw him one day above Croke Park in a grounds tournament final. What did you say? He'd never had?
No, I'm only joking.
No, I know, but go on. Listen, he's
a lot of boys said he wouldn't pass any ball, sure, he'd never cut himself.
He wouldn't, you're right. Listen to me, I saw him playing in a grounds tournament final above Croke Park one day against Offaly. I was involved myself, and he scored 2 goals and 9 points.
Good God, fierce scoring. Like, again, he was another guy that played as a brilliant defender, and then adjusted up to the forwards after that.
He did make it.
Fantastic
player,
football. Brilliant.
Fabulous player, yeah.
With the serious injuries that he has, well, wishy. I mean, he broke his leg, I think. He broke two legs, and he broke broken one twice or something.
He did.
Fantastic, yeah.
And then at number four, Pat Spillane, 49 goals.
Yeah, fair dues to him. That's a fair return. Yeah.
What do you think of his book, Nick?
Oh, the book. The book is great.
What did he say about you in the book?
I don't know. I'd say he didn't say too much now, but I think he had a bit of a hop about the penalty. He was probably right. So.
Did you ever think of writing a book yourself?
No, I don't know. Wish
come not. Here. In 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years' time now, if the Kerry trainer seen it came up, would you take it?
Gee, I don't know. We'd have to... that's a long way down the road.
But we'll have a talk. Anyway, in at number three, I suppose he was recognised as one of the great players, and he was a friend of your own again. John Egan with 54 goals.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. John was a super player. I suppose a lot of people say he was underestimated, but he was never underestimated by us. He was a vital cog in the team, and he was actually one of the goals that I remember most that I mentioned to you later on, but John was involved in it. he was a player that had brilliant vision as well as strength, and he was a totally unselfish player. Like.
Yeah, he was a great player.
Super player.
I thought he got a raw deal the year he was taken off. That hurt him, I think. Didn't he?
That was the year I was injured. Which in 84, he came in that day into the dugout, and he was very disappointed. And he went away nearly straight after the game. And I often spoke to him after, and I'd say probably he regretted that he didn't stay on, because he could have been under 86, 87 easy like.
Yeah. Well, there's only two places left anyway. Two great goal scorers left anyway. In at number two, your friend and glad to say, a friend of mine owned the Bomber Liston with 58 goals.
The Bomber Liston. Some player. So unbelievable. Yeah, big. Like for a big man, he had so much skill, you know. He was absolutely brilliant. And again, he was the same as John, really. He was a totally unselfish player.
Well, Mick, the night I met you and asked you to come in and tell us talk, I think I tricked you a small bit. But we listen, I met you. And who's the man that was with us? George Boyle,
yeah,
was
George
it?
Boyle, yeah,
George Boyle, he runs a shop here in town,
that's
to see
right,
it. George says, look, go on, Mickey, he says, but give me a mention, George Boyle. So, the top Kerry goal scorer in the last 50 years with 68 goals, Mick, Mickey Sheehy. Listen, congratulations.
Thanks, Wish. Thank you.
Fabulous scoring, Mick. 68 goals. And I would say myself now, it is only my impression, and the listeners might check me up on it or might send in notes the next night, I'd say there was probably nobody in the previous 50, 60 years to score maybe more goals than yourself. So Mick, what do you say to that? Did you ever think you'd finish up the top goal?
I didn't wish it, really. No, you know, a lot of people talk about records and about this and that, you know, but excuse me, never. I had no idea, genuinely. I know I would have got a good few goals, but I wouldn't have any idea that I would have been top of the list.
Your memorable goals now, Mick, talk away to us. And forget about the one a while.
Oh, yeah. That's one. Well, one of the best goals that I got was, well, that I was involved in, was in a, I can't remember what year, it was a Munster final in Killarney. I think it might have been 1980, which was the John Egan and Bomber, and I think it just showed them what team players they were. There was, I think Jack O'Shea kicked in a long ball, and the three of us were out about 30 yards, but it was heading for Bomber's direction, and Bomber was breaking it down to John, and I just turned and there was a big gap ahead of me, and I just took off on a run, and Bomber broke it down to John Egan, and all I remember was just actually turning, and the ball was literally inside my hands, and I scored. It was easy, I couldn't miss, but it was some pass. It was about a 25-yard leg pass straight into my mouth.
What was your most memorable one, mate? Would that be it? Or would you, what goal now, really, did you get the most pleasure out of?
Well, I suppose, I think this was the first day I played in Croke Park. Was in, what year was it? It was 74, I think, in a league semi-final. It was a televised game against Tyrone. And I got a goal, the second goal. I got two goals the same day. I got a second goal. And it was, it went right into the top corner. I don't know whether I meant it or didn't, but it gave me a great thrill. It was my first game in Croke Park. That was a special one for me.
No, Mick, tell us about that one.
That other one?
Yeah, that other one. Explain it to us, because they want to hear about it anyway.
Gee, they couldn't want
and if you got a penny for every time you explained it.
I there's no doubt about it that poor Paddy Cullen was at the particular time, there was no foul. There was no question of a foul.
No, there was but right.
It was due to a previous incident with himself and Jar. And because the Kerry crowd were kind of jeering Paddy when he was getting the ball, and I mean he just passed it out to Robbie Keller, and he was perfectly entitled to stop and argue. And there was a gap, and I don't know to this day, was it the man above directed me to do it? But it just went in. It was just one of those things. Like.
Did you ever try it before that or after it,
mate? I don't think so. I can't remember. I might have tried a few things like that in training, but I don't honestly know, because I know if I'd missed it, the wire would have killed me, because he would have probably said it was a pint for the taking, you know.
When you travel now, Mick, around Tralee, and you're going to have an old drink, or going to a meal, go to social travel all over Ireland, wherever you go, what's the three questions of the rest of you, mostly, would you say?
That flipping goal is nearly the three of them. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
that goal. That goal, I suppose a lot of people would mention the 82 being beaten by Offaly, you know, and the penalty miss was a crucial miss at that particular stage of the game.
How did the Derby goal affect yourself personally, no, Mick?
Oh, gee, like, I'll be true with you. I kind of felt when I missed the goal, I could see something happen. Like, I could sense. I think we were 3 or 4 points up at the time. And, like, had I got the goal, it would definitely have killed the game. But then I remember Matt Connor got 2 points from two frees to bring it back down to 2 points. And I just had this feeling myself, you know, that, gee, I said, that this was Kuchnik a goal, you know, and it was all, you just hoped that the crowd would open up and spoil it. It was very hard to take that defeat. Like, it was
after that, then, Mick, for weeks or months after, did it affect you?
It affected all those lads. Like, it was, yeah, but you get over those things, you know, because,
yeah.
I like, one thing I would say is that, I think it was probably okay, it cost us 5 in a row, and I think that team probably deserved to make history, but I don't think we'd have won the 3 in a row had we won the 5 in a row, the 3 in a row after that.
I must say, Mick, about the Paddy Cullen goal, a great friend of mine, Mary Regan in Killarney, she's married to Tommy Regan, not Bracken, all the other Regan, was common man, but she went up to Neil Diamond in Croke Park there 4 or 5 years ago, and I met her the following year after. Well, Mary, how do you enjoy Neil Diamond? Oh, she was brilliant, she was outstanding altogether, and I said, had you a good seat? Great seat. Seat, do you know where I was sitting? My seat was in the exact spot, you said, where Mickey Sheehy kicked the goal against Paddy Cullen. And she's still talking about where she sat. Well, she sat in the seat. Mick, Jimmy O'Brien, Killarney, was talking today. We must talk about a bit about Jimmy O'Brien, and he told me you nearly got him killed at the county final when you beat Killarney. You got a goal that year, remember, because you scored a great goal against Killarney in the county championship. Jimmy's a Killarney man, and he said he had to applaud Mickey Sheehy's goal. There was a Killarney man alongside him, he nearly hit him, and he still doesn't talk about it. Dennis Casey, he's the barman, the arbutus, he was on to me today too, and he said to wish you the best. A Tralee caller said, oh, the $100 sent to the Rock Club in 1962 from Boston was sent by the fella that sang the duet with Weeshie at the Christmas party in Kinmare. I know it was all right now. We sang a duet all right. Well, I was like a big cut in the gate. I croaked away. Boston's Castle Line, the programme last week, congrats on a wonderful programme and very enjoyable. That was the ballads and songs of Kerry Mick. I never knew heard it now. Pat Reen, the Rock, from Mikey Sheehy, what was the most he scored in a club game? Good question.
Oh, I don't honestly know, Weeshie. In a club game, I don't really and truly don't know.
Yeah, what was the highest you ever scored for Kerry, mate?
In an under-21 game, I got against Tipperary was the highest score in the Munster final. It was 3-9.
Who was the best forward you ever saw outside of Kerry?
Best forward, I'd say he was probably one of my idols growing up, was Sean O'Neill of Down.
Yeah, and you were on playing dead then, mate?
Best forward, outside of Kerry.
How would Matt Connor rate?
Oh, Matt Connor would, yeah. Matt Connor was an absolute gem.